When we met prior to our 2 week break, I had a conference and then we had Purim. So before we did that, we were finishing our study of Perek Hey, chapter 5. And the conversation that Daniel has with Belshazzar, the end of the last Babylonian king mentioned in Tanakh and in the Sefer. And the last thing we looked at was he interprets the writing on the wall as your days are numbered and you've been found wanting and judged and you will fail. And Belshazzar that night, Belshazzar dies. And that is really the end in historical terms of in Tanakh terms, that is the last of the Babylonian kings. He falls to the fall of Persia and the conquest of Persia. Perek Vav, theoretically, is where we should start next. We're not going to, for reasons I'll explain. Perek Vav continues with Dayavash Hamadi, who is the king who takes over sort of chronologically the next one in line. It's not the same Dayavash who rebuilds the temple. This is an earlier Dayavash, a Dayavash Hamadi instead of Dayavash HaParsi. This is before Cyrus or Koresh. Nonetheless, that's the story. And it's the famous story of Daniel in the lion's den, gets thrown into the lion's den for praying. We're going to skip it. And the reason we're going to skip it is what I'm trying to do is look at the chapters chronologically instead of sequentially. And as we already addressed in a previous year, there is a jump here in chapter 5 and 6. It jumps to the last of the stories. It finishes all the stories in Sefer Daniel, and then it continues with the visions and the dreams and the prophecies of Daniel himself. And so part 2 of the book starts in chapter 7. But for our purposes, if we're looking at it chronologically, it's very important because chapter 7 begins in chapter 6. Chapter 7 begins, Bishnat Achat LeBelshazzar. So we already looked at a story that occurred in year 3 of Belshazzar, or the final year of Belshazzar. This is year 1. So we're going back a little bit in time, but to the beginning of the same king with Daniel is engaged with in the conversation about the writing on the wall. And I want to pick up from here, this chapter and the next one, Zion and Chet, are both visions that Daniel has in the reign of Belshazzar, first year and third year, because it will help us understand the background to Daniel. When Daniel walks into Belshazzar's chambers and in his feast and he sees the writing on the wall, he knows exactly about the demise of Belshazzar and the end of the Babylonian era. In the beginning of Persia, because in part, he's already had these prophecies about Belshazzar. And so before we jump into Persia, which we'll do B'ezrat Hashem after Pesach, I want to look at these prophecies themselves. So we're going to do this out of order. We're skipping chapter 6. B'ezrat Hashem, I owe it to you. I'll come back to it. We're jumping to chapter 7, Perek Zayin. Shnat Achat LeBelshazzar Melech Bavel. Daniel, and again we're still in the Hebrew translation from the Aramaic. Daniel Chalom Ra'a V'Chezyonot Rosho Al Mishkabo. In the first year of Belshazzar, Daniel had a dream, a vision that he had. Now, unlike Nebuchadnezzar, when Daniel came in to interpret Nebuchadnezzar's dream, here Daniel himself has a dream. It's not quite in the category of a prophecy or a nevuah. It's described as a vision, but it's a dream, a chalom. He's sleeping he has his dream while he's sleeping. Azayat chalom katav, and he wrote it down. And this is essentially what the dream said. He woke up, you know, when we wake up from a dream and we forget it very quickly. So here's a good lesson. Whatever you remember, write down, because within seconds you're going to forget the rest of the dream. Azayat chalom katav rosh milin amma. Oned Daniel v'omer, ro'eh ha'iti b'chazoni im layla, v'hine arba ruchot ha'shamayim magichot li ha'magadol. In this dream, in this vision, I saw four winds of the heavens breaking forth upon the great sea. And v'arba chayot gdolot olot min hayam. And out of the sea emerged four great beasts. Shonot zu mizu. Diverse, unique, each one from the other. Harishana, the first that I saw, he'arye, looked like a lion. Uknafaim shel neshela, with wings of an eagle. We can argue the translations of various words in Tanakh and the animals identified, but it's not really relevant to the theme of the basic message of the story, so I'm going to take things at face value. First, I saw was a lion. Looked like a lion with eagle's wings. So you can imagine a flying lion. Re'ayiti ad asher nimritu knafeha. I stood and watched until its wings were plucked off. It was lifted from the earth. Ve'al raglayim ka'adam hukama, and it stood upon 2 feet. Ulevav adam nitana, and was given a heart of a human being. Ve'hine chaya acheret, and behold, the second beast, shnia, domeladov, this one looked like a bear. And it stood off on one. It stood on one side, or raised itself up on one side. Maybe it was lying down. In its mouth, between its teeth, it had 3 ribs. It was feasting on an animal. And it was said unto it. In other words, a voice spoke to it and said, go devour flesh, bone, go eat, which is what the bear was doing. Then I saw another animal, looked like a namer or a leopard, which had 4 wings to fly with, and it had 4 heads, which is quite a frightening thought, right? A leopard, 4 heads, 4 wings. Vishilton nitana, and it was given dominion. Chareze roe aiti bechazyonot laila. Then I saw in this vision at night, vine chayad vi'it, a fourth beast. Nora'a, dreadful, ayuma, terrible, chazaka yoter, stronger than all the rest. Shinaim shel barzel lagdolot, it had great iron teeth. Ochelet umidika, it was devouring and it was smashing into pieces. V'ashar b'raglado feset, and with its feet it would trample. V'im mishunami kol achayot ashelafaneha, and it was different. It was different than all of the other beasts that came before it. V'karnayim eserla, it had 10 horns. Mistakela iti b'karnayim, I was staring at these horns. V'ine Keren achat zira al tabenehen, and lo and behold, a little small horn emerged from between all of the 10 horns that I was staring at. Vishalosh mina karnayim harishonot ne'akru mipaneha, and 3 of the horns that were there that I was staring at dropped, moved away as this little one emerged. And this little horn of this beast, hine enayim ke'ene adam bekeren zo, it had eyes, like the eyes of a man. Upem daber gdolot, and it had a voice to speak great things. Ra'e ha'iti ad asher kis'ot hunuchu. I watched until thrones were placed. Ve'atik yamim yashav, and the Ancient of Days sat upon this throne. Its hair was white as snow. Its raiment was white like its hair was like pure wool. The throne was like fire. Galgalav esh toleket. The wheels of this throne were burning fire. If anybody's ever studied Sefer Yechezkel and see the vision of Yechezkel, what we refer to as Mersemer Kavah, the throne of God, and there's a lot of similarities between them. Nahar shel Esh Nimshach. There's a stream of fire, river of fire that issued and came forth from it. V'yotzem lifanav. Elef alafim yishamshuhu. There were tens of thousands of malachim ministering to it, v'dibor v'vot lefanav yamodu, millions standing there. Adin yeshabu sfarim niftachu. The judgment had begun, and books were opened. One of the most powerful and direct references to the notion of God sitting in judgment with books of life and death open before it. Rosh Hashanah imagery, if you will. Sifrei Chaim v'Sifrei Metim p'tuchim lefanav. This is Hadin Yeshab u'Svarim niftach. Ve'er hayiti, azay mikol ha'dvarim ha'gdolim shel ha'keren ha'medaberet, I behold, at the time, the voice of the words spoken by the small horn. Ra'iti ad asher humta chaya ve'avad gufa v'nitna likod esh. I watched until the beast was slain, its body destroyed, and it was burnt by the fire. And not only was that beast destroyed, ushar ha'chayot, all of the other beasts, u'avru mil shiltonan, they were removed from their dominion. And prolonged for their lives were prolonged for a season, for a time. Re'iti b'chazyonot alayla, v'hine im ananesh hashamayim, and behold, with the clouds of the heavens, came kiben adam, like a person. V'haya. Ad atika yamin egia, this person came to the Ancient of Days, who was sitting upon his throne, ulefanav ikrivu, they brought him before the Ancient One. Velo nitan shilton vikaru malchut, and to him was given dominion, glory, and kingdom. V'chol ha'amim, ha'umot, v'haloshonot, oto yavodu, all of the nations, peoples, and languages would serve him. Shiltono shilton olam, his dominion would be everlasting. Asher lo ya'avor, will not pass away, umalchuto, and his kingdom, asher lo tishachet, which shall not be destroyed. That's the dream. And we can begin to try to decipher the dream and make heads or tails out of it and its meaning and its symbolism, but Daniel makes it easy for us because he was as confused as we are. And so he asked the question. Nif amaruchi, ani Daniel, my spirit was pained, my heart was beating. V'chazyonot roshi v'aluni, these visions frightened me. Karavti al echad ha'omdim, so I went over to one of the people standing there. V'et anachon v'akesh mimenu, at one of the angels. V'et anachon v'akesh mimenu al kozeh, I asked him to understand these things. V'amarli, and this is what he told me. And he told me the interpretation of the dream. So now Daniel has this vision, and now he has an interpretation given to him by one of these fiery beings that stood by. Ela chayot hagdolot shein arba, these four beasts, these four that you saw, arba'a melachim yakumu min ha'aretz. They are four kingdoms that shall emerge, that shall arise from the earth. Which is not an unfamiliar trope to us. We've seen this now already a few times, especially in the first chapter of the book. Yirshuet hamalchut ad olam ve'ad olam olamim. They shall possess the kingdom for generations, for eternity. Asay chafatzti vada'ut al achayot achayar ve'it. But I really wanted to understand the fourth beast, not the lion, not the bear, not the leopard. What really caught my attention was this fourth beast, which has no parallel. Doesn't look like anything. Sheta shone mikulanus. Nora yoter, exceedingly terrible. Shineh shal bayzer, v'tzipanayim shal nechoshet, with teeth of iron and nails of brass, v'chelet medikah, v'ashar ben aglaf, v'feset, stamping and destroying. And 10 horns, v'leser ha'kanayim asher b'rusha, v'acheret ha'shalta, and the little one that came up and displaced the others, v'naflu mipanei ha'shalosh, v'yaker ha'nei einayim la, this little horn that has eyes and has a mouth to speak, u'peh medaber gdolot, u'me'ane gadol mi'chavroteha, and it was greater than all of its others. What was going on? Re'e ha'iti v'yaker ha'nei osa krav im kdoshim. I watched as this little horn waged war with all of the kedoshim, all of the malachim that was standing there, Yuchalala, and was successful. It prevailed against them. Adashaba Atika Yamin, till finally the Ancient of Days came, V'din nitan l'kdoshei elyonim, and passed judgment for all of the Most High. V'azman igia, the time came, V'atamachut yorshu kdoshim, until finally the Holy Ones, the Saints, they were able to obtain the kingdom. So what's going on? So he said this, Hachaya Revi'it, this fourth beast, Malchut Revi'it Tia Ba'aretz, it's a fourth kingdom that shall be upon the earth. Asher Tishne Mikol HaMalchuyot, different from all of the other kingdoms. V'tochal Et Kol HaAretz, it shall consume the earth. U'tedushenu T'dikena, and it will tread upon the earth and it will break it to pieces. As HaKanayim Mimena, as for the 10 horns of Mimena, HaMalchut, this kingdom, Asra Malachim Yakumu, will establish 10 kings. And then after those 10 kings, Acher Yakum Achareha, shall another kingdom arise, that shall be different from all of the others. Ushloshet Malachim Yeshpil, and he will put down the other three kingdoms, referring to the three horns that it displaced. Udvarim Litzad Ha'elyon Yedaber, he shall speak words against the Most High, this little kingdom that will disperse the other three kings and will conquer and destroy all the others. It shall even go to war against the Most High. Ve'et Kedoshei Ha'elyonim Ya'aneh V'yachshov L'shanot Zmanim V'dat, and it shall go against the holy ones of the Most High, and it shall try to change the seasons and the laws of the world. V'inatnu biyado ad moed u'moedim v'chatzi moed, and it will be given that opportunity until a time and times and half a time. Ad moed u'moedim v'chatzi moed. And if that's not clear, then the Aramaic should make it even clearer. Ad idan ve'idanin uplag idan. Just for the sake of it. V'adin yeshev. The judgment shall continue. V'shiltono ya'aviru. And his dominion of this beast shall be taken away. La'ashmid u'la'avid atasof. And finally, consumed and destroyed. V'yamachut v'ashilton v'agdula shalamalchuyot, and the kingdom and the dominion and the greatness of all of these kingdoms, tachat kol ha'shamayim, under the whole heavens, nitnu la'am kedoshei elyonim, will finally be given to the people of the Holy Ones Most High, malchuto malchut olam, and that kingdom shall be eternal. The kol ha'shiltonot lo ya'avdu v'yishma'eyu, V'yishameu, all of the other kingdoms shall serve and obey the one that will be given, this one, this person, this human being who came at the end and was given dominion. Ad kan sofo shel davar. Ani Daniel, me'od rayonai yevaluni, these matters frightened me, v'zivi yishtane alai, my countenance changed, v'et hadavar b'libi shamarti, I kept all of this in my heart. That's the vision, year one of Belshazzar. All right. So we have to make heads or tails out of this somehow. Pardon the pun, that was not intentional. Essentially, to summarize this vision, let's take away the distraction for a second. To summarize this vision, we have Daniel has a dream, and sees four animals. Each one different, each one a different basic animal with variations of sort of natural, from the counterpart to nature. The lion with wings of an eagle, the bear with the bones between its teeth, the leopard with four heads and four wings, and then this fourth beast, which has no parallel, with 10 horns, And then it grows a little horn, and the little horn displaces the 10 bigger horns, or 3 out of the 10 bigger horns. And then there is the Atik Yomen, referring to the ancient one, which I'm assuming is a reference to a Kodesh Baruch Hu sitting in judgment of the history of the world. And it passes judgment on all of these kingdoms, but in particular that little horn that tried to displace the bigger horns and was destroying kingdoms and destroying all of the other animals. God finally, and going to war even against the Malachim that were standing there, and even against God in judgment stops that little horn and ultimately gives Malchus, gives the kingship to the Am Kedoshei Elyon, the people of the Holy One on High, and that's the end of the vision. Of course, in that vision, this is the one who comes together, brought the human being in this vision, who comes with the clouds of the sky, Manane Shemaya, and he comes to be part of that judgment, and God essentially gives him, as the leader of the Am Kedoshei Elyon, gives him the leadership of the people and Malchus for generations to come. That's the vision. Okay? Not hard to figure out, more or less, on the face of it, what we're dealing with. Very similar vision and theme and character to the vision that Nebuchadnezzar had in chapter 1. Where he saw a great vision of that which represented kings. In his case, it was a vision of a soldier or of a person, and the different elements of the person and the different parts of the body representing the different kingdoms that would emerge over the course of history. There's clearly a historical sweep being referenced in this chapter. Each one of these kingdoms represented by a different animal. Have to figure out what the connection is and what they represent, but more or less kind of brings us back into the world of chapter one, where we talked about, or chapter two, I should say, and where we talked about the four kingdoms and the significance of those kingdoms and what they represented in the historical context of Sefer Daniel. And he has several of these visions all referring to the same kind of routine of four kingdoms that will emerge through the sweep of history until finally the kingdom of the people of the Holy Ones, referring to Israel, and the restoration of what is ostensibly the one who would lead that people, or Melech HaMashiach, as the reference to the individual who comes as part of that judgment. In short, that's the picture. Okay. Now, the problem, of course, is there are essentially two critical questions that we need to look at in this story. Critical question number one is, who are the four animals and who do they represent? If we want to understand Daniel's vision, who are the four animals? What do they represent? Not a hard question to answer, because it's the same question we asked back in chapter two. And the Mefarshim more or less take the same approach to the same question. So we'll address that, and we'll look at that briefly. The much more important question for us, which is where we're going to spend the bulk of our time this week and next week, is in the one reference Daniel has, which opens up a whole new conversation. And that is that Daniel puts a time frame to this story. That which we have not yet encountered, Daniel here and in several more places in the book, places a very specific time frame to this vision. And that occupies the attention of the Mefarshim more than anything else. So let's take a quick glance back at the text. And in addition to the four kingdoms themselves and who they represented, there was one pasuk here which I kind of jumped at, which was pasuk chaf hey. This little kingdom which will dash and thrash and destroy and consume and uproot the world, kedoshel yanim yanevi achshav. Little kingdom shall speak words against the Most High, and it shall wear out the saints of Most High. But for how long? yinatnu biyado ad until moed moadim v'chatzim moed. Which of course gives us a very specific reference of until a time and times and a half a time. And that is about as clear as mud as it gets. All right. So let's see what's going on. Here's the source page. If you don't, it should be posted in the chat. Let's just do that one more time for the sake of, whoops. Let's see. No, that's not what I wanted. I wanted the chat. Okay, let's get the sources. Well, copy link. Okay, if anybody's missing it, there it is. Okay. So I want to just show you Rashi because, and then go ditto, because Rashi here does exactly what he did in chapter 2, and the other Rishonim across the board that we looked at when we looked at chapter 2 offer virtually the exact same kind of picture. Rashi says the first kadmita, kadmaita ki ayeh, look like a lion, gapin dinisharla, with wings of an eagle. If you remember this first one, this is the easiest to recognize because it's the lion that is given the wings removed from it and it's given the heart of man and it stands on 2 feet. Have we ever encountered a beast of the field given the hearts of a human being and stood on 2 feet in the context of Sefer Daniel? We have. It's the famous vision of the tree of the dream, second dream of Nebuchadnezzar in the tree, where he was turned into a beast of the field and then transformed back. So that's a relatively easy one to identify. He ki aryeh v'la kanfei nesher. Rashi's translating the opening phrase. He malchut bavel. This is a reference to the kingdom of Bavel. Sheta Moshalot Botasha'a, which was reigning at the time, Nebuchadnezzar and Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar. The second kingdom, Dom Yalodov, looked like a similar to a bear. Ze Remez L'machut Paras. This was is a hint to the kingdom of Persia. Why the kingdom of Persia? What do we know about the kingdom of Persia? We know a lot of things, but from Tanakh, we don't know a lot. From Tanakh, we know more or less the story of Megillat Esther. Yeah, more or less, can you summarize Achashverosh's character in Megillat Esther? What does Achashverosh do in Megillat Esther? Besides authorizing Haman to destroy the Jews, and besides the holiday of Purim, etc., Achashverosh is known for one thing, most famous thing in Megillat Esther, and that is?
Drinks and parties.
Eats, drinks, and parties. It's a great time. So says Rashi, Shetimloch Achar Bavel, Sheochlem v'shotim gedol. Because he eats and drinks like a bear. And they're as fat as a bear. That's what we know about Achashverosh. That's what we know about Machay Paras. Okay. Gapin, the next one. Gapin Arba V'Arashin, this beast that has 4 wings, and this leopard. Did I skip? The third one is like a leopard. With the 4 heads and 4 wings, the Abba Arashin, Hem Dalid Moshlim Shechilek Lem Alexandrus Mokedon. This is a reference to Alexander the Macedonian, right? Alexander the Great in the kingdom of Greece. And it's a reference to the fact that Alexander the King, the Great, when Alexander died, he more or less, either intentionally or unintentionally, handed over the reins of his kingdom to 4 of his generals, known as the Diadochi. And the rest of that story we'll talk about. And bimotot malchuto, kamosha ketuv b'sefer Yosef ben Gurion, sheachaya zot ha-shlishit hi malchut Antiochus, this third leopard is the kingdom of Antiochus. V'nikra namer, why is it called a leopard? Hashem sheta gozeret gzerot al Yisrael menumerot u'mishunot zu mizu. Because it decrees against Israel, which were spotted and varied from one another. We'll talk about that at greater length at another point. V'kanaim eser, the fourth kingdom, the fourth beast, which has no parallel and has 10 horns, and then this little horn that emerges from it. Esa kanot zu perish lo hamalach shem asra malachim shiamdu l'romi kodem laspasianus shecharevet habayit. That is a reference to the 10 kings of Rome that will reign over the world until the little throne, the little horn, which is a reference to Aspasianus, who will rule over Rome when the temple is destroyed. That's Rashi's understanding, and it takes us to the destruction of the second temple. More or less, if I were to show you and we would explore the other Rishonim on this parak, you'd end up with exactly the same parallel and issue that we had in the second parak, namely Rashi and the Balei Ashkenaz sort of more or less working off this theory of the Medrash that there were four kingdoms, Bavel, Persia, Greece, and Rome. And then comes along the Rishonim that had more of an interface with the world of Islam, and suggest that we're missing the story of Islam. If we're going all the way to Yemot HaMashiach, then you can't ignore Islam, and you can't ignore Yishmael, and therefore they interpret the kingdoms slightly differently, as Bavel, Persia, Greece, and Rome as one, because Greece and Rome are interconnected in various ways, and then Yishmael at the end. And more or less, those are the four kingdoms. And it's a straightforward vision of the history of the world until we reach Yemot HaMashiach, until this last one who comes in the like the cloud of the sky, Ka'anei Shemaya, and he comes to, and his God gives him reign and kingdom, and his kingdom is enduring, much like the stone that Rashi saw in the second vision of in the first dream of Nebuchadnezzar and Perek Bet. You had that stone that came and destroyed the kingdoms and established a kingdom of Israel. More or less, that's the story. So it's not a hard parak to understand in terms of its symbolism. It's a much harder parak to understand in terms of its message. What exactly is the message it conveyed here? More importantly for us, I'm much more intrigued by this reference to the time. This last kingdom, namely Rome slash Yishmael, according to Ibn Ezra and according to Marbanel, or Rashi, it's referring to just to Rome, will be given reign over humanity until Moed u'Moadim v'chatzi Moed. Now, I will tell you, and just kind of get a glance moving forward, that this is not the only place in Sefer Daniel where Daniel is intrigued by the question of timing. How long is it going to be until this last person who comes, Ba'anane Shemaya, with the clouds, this last individual will be given Malchut that will be eternal, and will be given Am Kedoshei Elyon, the Nitnu La'am HaMalchut Tachat HaShemayim, V'Agdula Shel HaMalchuyot Tachat HaShemayim, Kol HaShemayim Nitnu La'am Kedoshei Elyon, until the kingdom of Israel will be given back their kingdom in the world. How long will it be? When will Mashiach come? It's one of the most dramatic moments, and it's one of the reasons why Sefer Daniel is so powerfully understood by the Rishonim as the one book of Tanakh that gives us a glimpse into, if not in riddles, but at least a glimpse into the timetable for humanity. When will the time, what we refer to as the Ketz of Yemot HaMashiach, arrive? I'll share a couple of additional references. And you'll understand exactly the complexity of this issue. Here's another parak. We're going to study this parak in greater detail, but parak Chet. Bishnat Shalosh L'Malchut Belshazzar, it's a vision that takes place in the third year of Belshazzar, and I saw this vision as a continuation of the vision that I saw in the first one, right? He says, so this is a second vision. We'll talk about this vision, B'ezrat Hashem, after Pesach, or maybe before, but I really want to just look at one piece of it, which is Pasuk Yud Gimel. And in this story, This is another. You have this keren achat mitzira. You have this horn that grows and grows bigger into galat zva shemayim, and it goes up into the heavens, and until finally it ve'ad sarat zva higdil, goes all the way up until the prince of hosts, and umimenu hurama tamid, from him the Tamid, the korban tamid, the daily offering was taken away. Bushlach mochon miktasho, and the place of his sanctuary was cast down. Vitzavat inatanada tamid, etc. Veshma echad kadosh medaber, and then I heard one of the holy ones saying to the other, one of the malachim, Vayomer echad kadosh lepalmonei medaber. Ad matay achazona tamid ve'apesh shomem? How long shall this vision be concerning the burnt offering being destroyed? Vayomer Eli, he said to me, Ad erev boker alpayim shloshmeot, until 2,300 evenings and mornings, and then the sanctuary shall be victorious v'nitzdak kodesh. That's a very specific time frame, even if we don't understand what it means. But the question was asked how long, and was answered, Ad erev boker alpayim shloshmeot, 2,300 evenings and mornings, whatever that means. If we go even further into the story, we find in chapter 12, I'm just going to go to the end of the book for a minute. We find in chapter 12, Daniel has another vision, which is a long vision. It's three chapters long. Get to it eventually. Daniel is told to go and shut these words up and seal them and hide them ad et ketz, until the time of the end comes. Yitbararu v'yitlabnu v'yitzarfu rabim v'yirshiu v'sha'im, until that time people will purify themselves, and the righteous shall do righteous and the wicked shall do wicked. Nobody's going to understand what the world is going to mean. V'yoy avinu kolor sha'im v'maskilim yavinu. From the time that the burnt offering shall be taken until the idols shall be placed, yamim 1,290 days. Amechakev v'yagia, happy is the one that waits, 1,335. In other words, what I'm suggesting here is that Daniel does something very odd, which is in character to the statement, Stoma dvarim v'chatom, seal them up, hide them. But he speaks in riddles. He gets us as close to any text in all of Tanakh to tell us, when will this happen? And then he speaks in riddles. 1,335 to those who wait. 1,290 days. Erev boker alpayim shloshmiot, evening and morning 2,300. And of course, in our story, which is Perek Zion, we have this extraordinary phrase of pasuk chafhei, ad moed umoadim v'chatzimoy. So what I want to do over the remaining time for this week and Bezrat Hashem next week is begin to explore how the Rishonim and the commentaries on Tanakh addressed these numbers. It's a fascinating game of what we refer to in the halacha as Chishuvei Ketz, calculating the times of when Mashiach is going to come based on the fact that Daniel has a vision about Mashiach, and he says, when is it going to be? And he's told, Ad moed moedim v'chatzim moed, time and times and two times and half a time. What does that mean? So that's where we're going to begin to, that's where our time is going to focus at the moving forward for now. All right. So in order to put all of this together, my apologies, I'm just sorting out papers. In order to put all of this together, the first thing we need to understand is how the Rishonim addressed the questions of biblical chronology. And I'll come back to all of this in a second. If you start, I put on the third page of this booklet, or second page actually, I put the other two references that I just shared with you, Erev Boker Alpayim Shloshmiot, 2,300 morning and evenings, and 1,200 days and 1,335. Why those numbers are relevant is because the Rishonim work off the assumption that whatever cryptic time frame is referred to in Idan, Idanin, Uplagi Idan, time, times, and a half a time, has to be the same time frame as the other visions, because it's three different prophecies, but all talking about the same concept, the sweep of history until Yemot HaMashiach. So from that perspective, they all have to match. If the time frames don't match, then what are we dealing with? So Rashi will talk specifically about all of the different numbers and they'll come up with dates, and we're going to have fun with all of that. But before we get to the fun, we need to get to the homework and the groundwork. And that is to understand how the Rishonim work off of dates. Because again, the Rishonim are working to find the specific date. It would be extraordinary if you could decipher this text to come up with the exact year in which Mashiach is going to come, because that's what Daniel was asking. When is this Ben Adam going to be received the Mishulton? When is it going to be? And he's told 2,300, 1,335, a time, time and a half a time. Whatever those mean, they're answers to the question. So we're going to work off, we're going to look at the Rishonim in a second. But the first thing we need to understand is the Chazal, the Rishonim specifically, are living in a time when they're working off actual numbers or dates or years, but they're all working off biblical chronology and traditional chronology. In other words, think through all everything that we've talked about in the past about the whole famous discrepancy of 135 years and whether our dates and secular or academic dates match. Right? You have to ignore all of that, because the Rishonim are going to talk in absolute numbers, and they're going to talk about years from creation. So what year are we from creation? Today? In the traditional calculation of the calendar? What year are we? Hebrew year.
5783.
What year are we in the general calendar? Or the secular calendar, or the English calendar, or the Christian calendar, however you want to define it?
2023.
Therein lies your key. If you want to translate between a Hebrew year and an English year, you need to remember this number, 3760. 3760 is your translation point. And it works for 8 out of the 12 months of the year, because the Hebrew year starts in September and the English year starts in January. But for 8 out of the 12 months, more or less, if you take your Hebrew year, subtract 3760, you're going to get your English year or your secular year. Okay, that's point number one. Point number two is that Chazal unanimously, no matter how they interpret Tanakh, and this is the fascinating part of it, no matter how they interpret Tanakh, no matter how many years they attribute to this part of Tanakh, or how many years they attribute to this story, etc., all that we've shown him work off the same biblical chronology in terms of anchors of years. Namely, it starts from the fact that Abraham is told that his children are going to be slaves in a foreign land for 400 years. Years of slavery, Abraham is told, and says Rashi, and based on the Medrash Seder Olam, this is the assumption, that all of these 400 years begin Mishinolad Yitzchak, from the birth of Yitzchak. Why? He goes through the whole calculation. Only in Mitzrayim for 210 years, but the actual 400 years starts from the birth of Yitzchak. Why that's the case? Rashi and Medrash has all kinds of textual reasons for it. There are Rishonim, we should know, there are Rishonim who disagree with Rashi and say, like the Ebenezer, who says we were in Egypt for 400 years. or the Abarbanel. But they still come up with the same dates for the destruction of the second temple. At the end of the day, we end at the same point. How we get there, they just have to navigate all the points along the journey. But they all end up in the same moment. And that's what's important for us. That's the second anchor point. The third anchor point is a pasuk in Malachim, namely that the temple itself, the construction of the temple by Shlomo HaMelech, takes place in year 480 from Yetziat Mitzrayim. Years after Israelites left Egypt, the temple was built or begun. That's a critical anchor point. That tells us exactly whatever we do with the timetable of Sefer Yoshua and the timetable of Sefer Shoftim and the timetable of Sefer Shmuel, it doesn't matter. We all have to get to the same point, which is from the Exodus until the temple is built is 410 years. Sorry, it's to go 480 years. That's fixed. It's a pasuk. The next anchor point is not in the text. I think I once shared with you how it was calculated, but Chazal give a total of 410 years to the first temple before it's destroyed. Yishalayim masu binyan harishon 410 shanim. It's based on a Tosefta. So Yerushalmi, it's also based on the Tosefta. The temple stood for 410 years, first temple, and 420 for the second temple. And how many years in between first temple and second temple? That's the Nevuah of Yirmiyahu, which is 70 years. So I now have enough information. If I remember one variable, I have enough information to put together the entire biblical chronology from the Avot until the destruction of the second temple, not only the first temple, but the second temple, at least if I take everything at face value. Because I know that there are 400 years from Abraham till the slavery in Egypt ends. There's 480 years from the Exodus until the temple is built. And there's 410 years from the building of the first temple until the destruction of the first temple. There's 70 years between the two, and there's 420 years for the second temple. I can now put it all together. I just need a starting point. I need a year to start this journey. And that's the easiest time part to remember. All I have to do is go back to Sefer Breshit and go calculate. Remember all those chapters that talk about this one beget that one. Go through all of Sefer Breshit, take all the texts that we have there and tell me exactly what year Yitzchak is born. Well, Yitzchak is born when Avram is 100 years old, correct? So now I need to know when Avraham is born. So here's the secret. You know this secret, you know the key to unlocking all of biblical chronology. Avraham is born in the year from creation. If you're still sitting, holding on to your seats, in the year 1948. If you didn't know that, you do now. Okay? And I could calculate that for you, but that would take us to Shiurim. But Avraham is born in the year 1948 from creation. That's a given. That's right out of the text. If you start from year zero, Adam and Shet and Enosh, etc., you go down the line, how old each one is when they begat the next generation. And Avraham is born in the year 1948 from creation, which in the general calendar is the year minus 1812. You can remember it as the reverse of the year of the war of 1812 if you want, or you can remember it as the year of 1948. I prefer 1948. But if you know that, everything else falls in place. 100 years later is the birth of Yitzchak. That's the year 2048. 400 years later is the Exodus from Egypt. That's the year 2448. 480 years after the Exodus, they build this first temple. That's the year 2928. 410 years later, the first temple is destroyed, 3338. 70 years after that, the second temple is built, 3408. 420 years after that, the second temple is destroyed, which is 3828. Now, take 3828 and subtract our code, our extrapolation code, what year in the general calendar is the second temple destroyed? So 38, 28 minus 20, 23 comes to 68. Now, you may have heard that the temple was destroyed in the year 70. So if after all of this, we're only 2 years off from the generally accepted historical number that the temple was destroyed in the year, in the second calendar, the year 70, and our calculations are that it was destroyed in the year 68, not terrible. It's not terrible. We're still within 2 years of margin of error. That's pretty cool. Where there's discrepancy is how to calculate between 1948 and 3828. How to go through those 2,000 years. There's room for discussion and disagreement of how to calculate those 2,000 years. But your starting point and your ending point are fixed. Everybody with me? Okay. We understand that. You're going to see that this number is going to be the anchor point to all of the discussion in the Rishonim, because they're all working off the same question. From the time of the destruction of the Second Temple, how many years until Mashiach comes? That's the question. And now we can start to plug in what Daniel is told. So today we have 5 minutes left. I'm just going to show you one calculation. And the rest of it we'll do Mizrat Hashem next week. So let's start here. This is the next page. This is where things get really fascinating. And I've given you this reference point again. This is going to be our anchor for all of this discussion. And we start with Rashi. Now, first thing Rashi says to us is actually, I'm going to come back to this Rashi in a second, source 10. But let's just to quickly glance at source 11. Ad idan v'idanin uplag idan, Rashi says, ketz satum huzeh, this is an obscured, hidden time. As it says, as the text says of Daniel in the end of the book, stom advarim v'chatom, that he intentionally kept it cryptic and hidden. V'darshuhu harishonim ish lefi da'ato, and each one of the Rishonim expounded this number, ish lefi da'ato v'kalua kitzim. Each commentary according to its view of how to calculate these numbers, and says Rashi, every one of them has passed. Rishonim Rashi is referring to those who came before him. And therefore, yesh lenu leputro, we have to give it a different ending. So we'll talk about this next week. I actually want to start from this earlier Rashi. We only have 3 minutes left, so let's look at this. This is a Rashi in the next parak. But it's relevant to us. Ad erev boker alpayim shloshmat, morning and evening 2,300. Re'iti peter b'shem Rabbeinu Sadia, I saw an interpretation of this number given by Rabbeinu Sadia Gon. Ukvavar, but the time that Rabbeinu Sadia Gon predicted for this number has already passed. So Rabbeinu Sadia Gon really did something very simple. Rav Sadia Gaon basically takes this number, Alpayim Shloshmeh, 2,300, assuming it's in years, adds it to the destruction of the Second Temple. I gave you the calculation here. Calculates 2,300 years from the second destruction of the second. Sorry, no. Rav Sadia Gaon calculates 2,300 years from the Exodus. He says from Yitzhak Mitzrayim, 2,300 years, comes to the year 4748. The year 4748 in the Hebrew calendar is the year 988 of the Common Era. That's what Rav Sadia Gaon says. Rav Sadia Gaon says 2,300 years start from the Exodus, and you end up with 2448 is the year of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. I just showed you that. Add 2,300 years to it, you get to 4748, or the year 988 in the Common Era. Why is that interesting? Note when Rav Sadia Gaon lived. These are the years of Rav Sadia Gaon. Rav Sadia Gaon lived between the year 882 and 942. In other words, Rav Sadia Gaon's calculations would put the year for the coming of Mashiach more or less sometime within the upcoming century from when Rav Sadia Gaon himself lived. Sometime within the next 100 years, Rav Sadia Gaon said and wrote, "Ah, oh, Mashiach is destined to come, calculated by the year 988 of the Common Era, or the year 4748. Says Rashi, Rashi lived in the year, was born in the year 1040. So by the time Rashi was born, the year 988 had come and gone. And Rav Sadia Gaon's calculation was no longer relevant. So he writes, Ra'iti peta b'shem ben Sadia Kvava, upatar o ad erev boker ad shiavo toha erev shneemar bo vayale et erev yeboker, referring to the evening and morning, referring to the time of the Nevuah in Zechariah, a time that will of redemption. Ubetuchimanu ki dvar elokim yakum olam lo yufar. Even though the calculation of Sadia Gaon has come and gone, we know that we're confident that God's words will stand for eternity, and at some point it will happen. We anticipate and hope and for the promise of the coming of our Redeemer, one calculated time after another, and for the sake of that end, when that Kates that was calculated passes and the number, the year occurs and Mashiach doesn't come, that's how we know with certainty that the calculation was an error, because it didn't happen. So the next commentator will come and interpret it differently, because clearly the approach of the previous one was an error because it missed its mark. Says Rashi, that's exactly how we're going to operate from here forward. If a previous Rishon calculated these numbers to a year, and that year has come and gone without Melech HaMashiach arriving, okay, so we'll know that that calculation was an error, and we'll try a different calculation, one after the other. So just to give you a heads up, Rashi, who lived between 1040 and 1105, calculates all of these numbers to be the year 1397 in the English calendar. The Abarbanel, who lived between the 14th, sometime between the 15th and late and early 16th century, 1437 to 1508, he recalculates all the numbers, and his number comes to the year 1503. The Malbim, who lived in the 19th century, recalculates all these numbers, and he comes up with the number of 1913. And if you haven't figured it out by now, there's a common thread between all these calculations. They're all sometime within the century to two centuries after the time in which the Rishon lived. It's a fascinating journey. We don't have time to do it all now. So Bezrat Hashem, next week, we will explore this journey in far greater detail. We'll go through the numbers. If you have a head for math, great. If you don't have a head for math, I'll chart it all out for you. You don't have to worry about it. I'll do all the math for you. And in the end, we're going to ask ourselves the simple question, which is this what Daniel meant? Or is there another way to go to give us some deeper insight as to what is referring, these chapters are referring? We have our work cut out for us. That is where our journey will take us. And thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. We will.
Thank you
very much.
Next week will be more interactive. This week was just, I just wanted to get all that information out on the table. So, Bezrat Hashem, next week we'll have a chance for a little more interaction and conversation.
Thank you very much. Can you just remind me what your email address is, please?
My email address is, I'll put it in the chat. It would help if I spelled it right. Okay. Shulman@mila.net.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for listening. And I do also want to let you know that we have one more shiur on Daniel scheduled for now. The next shiur after that, which is 2 weeks from today, They've asked me to do a special shiur on Pesach. So we're going to take the last shiur that was scheduled for Daniil, and we're going to turn it into a shiur for Pesach, and then continue with Daniil after Pesach.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So when all these numbers are wrong, is the attitude of the rabbis in the day that the people who calculated it wrong or the people weren't worthy of Mashiach at that time? In other words, is it the math?
That's a really good question. Rashi and basically the Rishonim all take the approach that if Mashiach didn't come by the year calculated, the calculation's wrong. We are going to take a slightly different approach, more along the lines of your second suggestion. But if we take that second suggestion, we may not need the calculations. So that's...
Well, they do say not to pray to be in the time of the Messiah because it's great upheavals.
Correct. So anyway, there's much to be unpacked. So.
Thank you. Thank you.
My pleasure. All right.
I think it's very interesting that Isaac Newton spent almost as much time on studying the Book of Daniel as he did cosmology. And his literature is now in the Israel Library.
I missed the beginning of your statement. Who are you talking about?
Isaac Newton.
Oh, Isaac Newton, sure.
And that coincidence is similar to the coincidence of the 1948 that you mentioned.
Interesting. Very interesting. Okay. There you go. All right. Very exciting. I will see you all, Bezrat Hashem, next week, if not sooner.
Thank you.